When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
It is Rewind to SmackDown. Welcome to all of our free listeners that might be joining us for this particular review. My name is Wei Ting. I'm hosting the show this week because John Pollock is off enjoying some vacation. And but in my co-host seat is the returning Neil Flanagan. Welcome back, Neil. Well, I guess after our XL edition, of course, where Neil did a great job leading the news pack today, talking to us about, the unfortunate passing of Osamu Nishimura, TNA, signing Elias, or at least the wrestler formerly known as Elias, WWE and UFC's return to Australia, Ricky Saints having to relinquish the Defy World Championship, and as well some ratings notes from AEW Dynamite. So for a bit of discussion on that, consider signing up for the Post Wrestling Cafe Patreon, where we have a lot of bonus shows coming out. We already did this week, but coming out next week as well. We got Collision Course coming out. We have a very special review of Queen of the Ring, the new movie about Mildred Burke that Karen Peterson and Kate from Montreal will be talking about. So that comes out next week, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Also, be on the lookout for a special interview that Karen will be conducting with some of the stars of that particular film, including Camille. That will drop sometime next week on the free feed. So all of that at postwrestling.com, postwrestlingcafe.com if you want the XL editions of these shows.
Tremendous. And even though it's only me and not John Pollock, don't just consider the cafe guys. Just do it. You know, it's really, really well worth it.
Just do it. All right. Listen to the man with the great Irish accent. All right. Just do it. Okay. What I did not do was make the trip out in the cold today to Toronto, to downtown Toronto, to watch tonight's edition of SmackDown Live. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be going to any of the events this weekend. Combination of just like duties at home and the crazy ticket prices for these shows. And I think just being able to cover the shows, quite frankly, a little bit better from home is keeping me nice and warm in my very frigid basement, which is still maybe a little bit warmer than the outside. But from the Scotiabank Arena, we had tonight's edition of WWE SmackDown. And in at least prepping for the show, checking in this afternoon, the show was completely different by the time the show actually began, because what they had advertised as of last week and this morning was Chelsea Green facing a mystery opponent, which we did not get at all. And of course, LA Knight versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the US Championship, which in the midday, Nick Aldis dropped out a video explaining to us there's been some controversy about who the number one contender is. And therefore, we instead got this mini tournament that was set up between six people, three matches, singles matches, to take us to a triple threat match coming out later in the evening. So I'm sure a lot of maybe late additions to the show, plus the additions of numerous talents from Raw, all here to make the show essentially like feel like a real kickoff type of show ahead of Elimination Chamber.
Sure. I don't know if you caught much of the actual kickoff event that they had in the city center today. I saw bits and pieces of it, where some of tonight's was the women's match, for example, the six woman match was kind of set up. It did feel a bit cobbled together on the hoof, this show. As it often does. I mean, John is the one who mentions this every week, that does Aldis not have a plan before
Somebody's been tearing it up. I mean, you know, I guess I guess in storyline, it's hey, it's The Rock. The Rock show. Maybe we blame everything on The Rock now. Okay, he's the board of directors. Final boss changing up the script last minute. But SmackDown comes to us from the Scotiabank Arena. 11,830 tickets distributed as of 7 o'clock this afternoon, according to WrestleTix. So, you know, pretty much near capacity for that particular building. So they start things off by replaying The Rock and Cody's 27-minute segment from last week. This time condensed, cleaned up to its main plot points, really emphasizing the soul line. I mean, the soul line is maybe in hindsight brilliant, okay? Because it's the line that really kind of got people talking, and it's that sort of what the fuck is he talking about that is sort of like they're emphasizing it and exaggerating it and making it really that much more of a selling point of this entire feud.
They are absolutely hammering the soul part of this, and that was in the edit at the start of this. We had a Rock tweet being shown that was, I think, just the word soul. Although I still think it's goofy. I just can't help it. It puts me in mind of the match between Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali. Do you remember the heart versus soul? It was on the kickoff for WrestleMania and for the vacant Cruiserweight Championship. So yes, whenever I keep hearing soul, it does remind me of that.
This one getting a few more people talking than I think that match did, though that match was very impressive for its time. Maybe just a note for Torontonians of interest, our premier, Ontario Premier Doug Ford, who just won re-election last night, decided to celebrate his victory by spending some time, at least, you know, ahead of WWE SmackDown here, receiving, I believe, a custom championship. This is not it. They gave this title to him, which is I know what they're going for. It's the world championship. It's blue and white, but it really just looks like the women's championship that Rhea Ripley has.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's cool. Both of them are cool. So congratulations to Doug Ford and everybody who voted for him. And he's got the championship all to I guess celebrate the victory at this point. Sorry if you work in healthcare or otherwise, but there we go. So we start things off here with Cody coming in, and he is immediately met with people who tell him that the final boss has arranged a personal locker room for him. And Cody is shocked by this, a personal locker room. So I guess indicating we're supposed to infer from this that Cody is not used to the personal locker room treatment. He's a man of the people. He dresses in the shared locker rooms like all of us would.
But he's got that fancy bus that he hangs out in.
Right.
But anyway, yeah.
Gets dressed in the bus, of course.
And he looked thoroughly unimpressed. We'll get to it. But you know, this is my problem with this, and we'll get to it. Way like the character that's been established over 2 years since Cody came back to WWE should have rejected this offer out of hand. He's completely unimpressed by this incredible dressing room with the bottles of wine and the food and the wine glasses and the watches and all the rest of it. So I don't know, but let's continue.
We go to our first in-ring segment of the night, and that is with Trish Stratus, Toronto's own. She comes out in a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey with the number 25 in honor, of course, of her 25th anniversary in the WWE. Amazing, like hard to believe, honestly. Mm-hmm. The crowd gives her a very big thank you, Trish, as she gets a little bit emotional at the reaction. Trish thanks Lillian Garcia for the introduction and says, what year is it? Lillian Garcia, The Rock, and Trish all in the WWE. She says what she loves about wrestling is the generational impact, as she points to a little girl and says her dad probably had a poster of her on his wall when he was young. She says she's wrestling tomorrow and says that it'll be the first time that she will be wrestling in front of her children live, which is very fascinating that I guess that they never made it to, or maybe they were too young to, you know, travel to any of her other events. So that's a pretty interesting and very touching note. And they did, of course, show little Max and Maddie sitting front row here. Mm-hmm. She introduces Tiffany Stratton to the crowd, and Tiffany Stratton as well comes out wearing a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey. The number 41, of which I don't really know the significance of. WrestleMania 41. That must be it, right?
Ah, yes.
So Stratton says, what time is it? It's Trishy time and it's Tiffy time. Mm. All right. As they, of course, show off Tiffy and Trishy on their Leafs jerseys written in the back. They then take their jerseys off and they throw them into the crowd at the same time in synchronization. And Tiffy remarks how synchronized they are with each other. And Trish explains, well, it's almost as if we've been hanging out a lot and doing yoga together. And that's why we're going to win tomorrow. So if you are a betting man, hanging out and doing yoga might be enough to help them clinch it. I thought this like entire first portion of this entire thing was pretty awful. The Trish stuff aside, especially like, you know, her talking about her children getting emotional, all of that sure. like felt real. The rest of this felt like just very blatant, desperate pandering for Tiffany Stratton, who's a very, at this point, like she's supposed to be a baby face. We're supposed to be cheering her over mm-hmm. Charlotte, but at least the reactions are pretty inconsistent. And I think her presentation as a baby face has been very inconsistent in the lead up to this. This felt like a pretty desperate putting on a Leafs jersey on anybody, especially somebody who I don't think has ever seen a Leafs game. Just feels like very much, very desperate pandering to me.
Yeah. It felt like, you know, baby facing 101, you know, put the home, sports team jersey on her, you know, and, you know, have her associated with someone who is a beloved figure of Toronto. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
To contrast this, they have coming out here Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. And of course, we mentioned Chelsea Green was supposed to have a mystery opponent match tonight. They just didn't even bother mentioning that. Nick Aldis mm-hmm. didn't shoot a video for it. We're just supposed to ignore that whole thing. She comes out here, of course, being the U.S. champion. She wears a half U.S., half Canada Leaf outfit. Piper Niven is completely decked out in Mountie gear. No shock stick, I don't think, at least. So the crowd immediately is chanting Chelsea, Chelsea, Chelsea. Yep. And Chelsea has to shut this down. She says, much like Austin Matthews, I'm the best thing to step into Scotiabank Arena. But unlike Austin Matthews, I actually win. So she gets some boos for that. She says she's honored to represent the people of America who are better than Canadians. And this is enough to generate the boos. Stratton says, did you have an opinion or a comment, Neil, as sort of an unbiased, you know, observer from the...
An unbiased transatlantic observer, yes. I could tell that this crowd really wanted to cheer Chelsea.
Over Tiffany Stratton, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once she got to the, you know, the people are better in America, that was, yeah. Especially given recent events, I think, yeah, that was going to tip the scales.
So who's better? Give me a choice.
I'm not going to give a choice about which people are better. I don't need much pushing to tell you which politicians I like better, you know, or the kind
of these days that I mean,
healthcare systems, those sorts of things. But
I think we have our fair share of, you know, not very great politicians either. But depends who you ask. Yeah. So she's honored to represent the people of America. Stratton, speaking for the Americans, says that Chelsea does not represent her. And Chelsea at this point calls Trish Tiffany's mom, which I thought was a very funny line. Stratton challenges her to a singles match for tonight. Chelsea claims she's busy, but Trish says the people of Toronto want it, and so a referee comes in and we get the match right away. So it's Chelsea Green versus Tiffany Stratton here. Stratton is about to hit the prettiest moonsault ever, but Piper Niven interferes. Trish becomes the equalizer, and Stratton then instead delivers a swanton to the floor onto the heels. Candice LeRae and Nia Jax at this point come out. They attack Trish Stratus, and the match gets DQ'd. And Trish begins this like fighting back sequence all mm-hmm. in her heels. That actually was probably the most impressive thing to me about this entire thing. Her coming out and just wearing these like very high heels and doing her punches and all that. And so this is all just to build up to our tag team match tomorrow night. Your thoughts on the match and really the overall segment?
The match was not great. Tiffany looked like she took a fairly bad landing as well, coming off the ropes. She didn't really get caught properly, but she seemed fine. I was expecting Nia to come out and, you know, and Candice, and they did. So this went sort of as the way I expected. When Trish and Tiffany did hook up, their tag team maneuvers looked somewhat less than smooth. So hopefully they'll they'll iron out those kinks before tomorrow evening.
I found it to be a very uninspired segment overall to promote. Yeah. What does feel like really a TV match, you know, for on a PLE. Again, Trish Stratus reaction aside, which I think, you know, I'm sure will be very nice in the Rogers Center. It just feels like such a desperate attempt to try to get that baby face pop for Tiffany Stratton artificially. So we wait to see if there's a bigger angle coming out of it. I imagine, I don't know, some involvement from Charlotte. What the long-term relationship between Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus is also remains to be seen. Is this Trish's only date, or is she going to set something up for beyond this particular date? We shall see. Will she fight in heels for the entire match?
We can hope. It does feel like the odd thing out on the card, I have to say. This match just does not really inspire a huge amount of interest, but we'll see.
So they play the video of Nick Aldis explaining the title tournament, and again, we have three singles matches to lead to a triple threat match all in the same evening, and we get our very first one here. It is Solo Sikoa. Well, first of all, actually, a backstage segment involving Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. Jacob says that last week's errant attack was an accident. Solo says, I'm sure it was. And this week, rather than take part in the tournament himself, Solo is giving his spot to Jacob Fatu because he wants him to know how much he loves him, as he and Tama share a very ambiguous glance. Do you have any thoughts on maybe how that whole relationship is going so far?
It's treading water at the moment. You know, there's obviously still tension between Solo and Jacob, and we'll see where that winds up. But I mean, there hasn't been much progression in it.
What's really Tama's role in all this? And why is he sharing all these extended glances with Solo?
Exactly. It seems to be his role is to hang around at the end of the segment and sort of give a strange look. You know, I don't quite get it.
Long term, it does feel like we're getting Solo versus Jacob, but is that do you see that being WrestleMania bound? And does the timeline feel right to you?
Yes, I think there's enough time. You know, we're still almost 2 months, probably a bit less at this point from Mania. So, yeah, that seems like the direction we're headed in. I will say, Wei, that my heart sank a little bit being in the time zone I'm at and thinking, you know, this one-night tournament, so we're going to have three singles matches and then three of those wrestlers are going to wrestle again, you know, for a number one spot. It's not even for a title, you know.
I was like, it's a three-hour show, and that's why we
exactly, yes, it feels like we got to fill these 3 hours even on a go-home show, which is a bit disappointing. June, I mention this every time I'm on, June cannot come soon enough when SmackDown is much better in a two-hour format.
So Cody shows up in his private room, and his room is like, it's basically a whole restaurant.
It's a restaurant, yeah.
They gave him the whole restaurant in the Scotiabank Arena here. He's got a big serving of food and sushi, courtesy of the final boss. And R-Truth is in here. He's found his way in the building. He's eating all the sushi. He says The Rock is the soul man and confuses him with, of course, Rocky Johnson. And so all throughout the evening, we have Cody meeting various superstars who kind of like give their opinions on whether or not Cody should be taking The Rock's offer. So R-Truth is the first to tell Cody to consider it because he wants The Rock to add jelly rolls to the table. So that is our first of these interactions.
First of the hard sell.
They get much better than this, everybody.
They do. But I mean, Cody, again, looks thoroughly unimpressed and uncomfortable in this ridiculous room. You know, he looks like he doesn't want to be there, doesn't want to touch the food, isn't interested in any of those millions of bottles of wine behind him. You know, it's not the way to this man's heart, clearly.
No, it's through a truck is the way to the man's heart, clearly.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly VeriScan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are getting together for a review of the new film Queen of the Ring, based on the Jeff Lean book. Plus, Rewind Away tackles the 2021 film Dune, Daredevil Born Again, covered by W.H. Park and Rich Fan. Plus, we've got Collision Course, Post Pro Res, and your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Join now, postwrestlingcafe.com.
So we get our first match of the actual tournament. It is Andrade taking on Jacob Fatu, and the crowd is chanting Fatu, like big time babyface to Toronto. Andrade hits the double knees, follows with a double moonsault for a two count. Crowd is chanting, this is awesome. Fatu avoids the hammerlock DDT. He sits down on Andrade and then delivers multiple hip attacks, followed by the prettiest moonsault ever, which that's what I'm going to call it. Okay. Prettiest moonsault ever for the win. And he advances, the first man to advance to tonight's triple threat. Crowd treated Fatu like the star, like you would expect him to.
Yeah. He's sort of borderline babyface just because he's cool. He's awesome. His promos are tremendous, particularly the ones he cuts when he's on his way to Gorilla. His finishing sequence, of the Impaler DDT and the moonsault, it looks really good as well. So, yeah, the crowd are into him, and rightly so.
Nick, all this is the Mac with the Street Profits. The Profits say that they aren't stopping their interferences and attacks until they get that tag title match that they're owed from Nick Aldis. And at this point, Legato shows up. Escobar demands an apology from the Profits for falsely accusing them of taking them out before they were both injured. And they won't apologize. And Nick Aldis makes the Garzas versus Street Profits match for tonight with serious title implications. So that's the match that we're getting up next. Los Garza taking on the Street Profits. And before the match even begins, DIY run out and they're attacking the Street Profits. They brawl. This leads to Pretty Deadly and the machine guns coming out. The whole tag division is out at this point. They're all brawling. And it goes on for what feels like a bit of a long time, but actually was only like a few minutes. So what did you think about the way they, this was our tag segment for the evening. What did you think?
It was the tag division seemed to feature fairly prominently on SmackDown every week. And to varying levels of success, I think one thing I would say is that the tag titles on SmackDown certainly have more value than the world tag titles on Raw, which is one of the rare sort of instances, I think, where that happens.
Quick, who are the champions?
The War Raiders.
Yes. Good job.
I do think the tag division here is more lively, better. They're telling some stories with them. But this segment, just the all-out brawl, didn't do a great deal for me. It sort of doesn't particularly move the story along. Like, who are going to be the next challengers to DIY? 2-3 weeks ago, that looked fairly clear that they were going to have almost a mini tournament that just went away. It didn't matter who won those series of matches. We seem to be back to square one now with the Street Profits reintroduced and kind of feeling quite dominant. So I suppose we'll see what happens. But I didn't love the segment. It didn't really seem to take us anywhere.
This is one of those segments that felt to me that might have been adjusted. I don't know this for a fact, but it feels like they might have had an actual match in there, if not for maybe some of the shuffling around of this particular show on the day of, perhaps. There's at least some semblance of a division here. We can at least say that, which is an improvement from maybe where it was a year ago. But no team is really getting over the other. Like, I think AEW... at least right now, we've got this, the Hurt Syndicate, okay, who are this, very dominant team, and you just kind of look forward to seeing who can challenge them, right? There's no... Everybody here is sort of on the same level. I'm not necessarily, cheering for one that much more over the other. They're all good to some level, right? But you need that one team with that spark. And I don't know if it's any of them just yet.
But it could be. I mean, you can see Machine Guns being that in that spot again. I could even see, I think Los Garza have a lot of potential as workers, certainly. I mean, they put on a really good match last week. But yeah, this doesn't do anybody any favours when it's just a big schmoz of a battle royal, really.
We go to the back as Cody has just been, he's doing a lot of walking backstage on this particular SmackDown. He runs into Drew McIntyre. Drew is approaching as a friend. He says that this is a big decision that can change your family's life for generations, and he doesn't know what he would do if he was in Cody's position. Drew reminds them of a time when they were so low on the card, and look at them now. Drew says he can't wait to see The Rock's reaction, though, when he finds out that Cody has already sold his soul a long time ago.
That was a moment for me. I don't know what Drew is alluding to. I don't know if any of our listeners or whether you do, Wei, but
I'm trying to think, like, at what point in Cody's career would the soul have left his body? Would it be
not the dashing era anyway? I don't think.
No, I think he's had plenty of soul. Now, are we talking pre All In or post All In? Did he still have a soul after All In when AEW started?
Good question.
I don't think he's ever, like, okay, if we're actually talking about, like, has the man actually ever sold out? I don't think so, but unless Drew is referring to maybe selling your soul as some other thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my reaction to that was, first of all, I don't know what he means, and then maybe there might be something to this that Drew has up his sleeve, you know, there could be a storyline hook here. I don't know. It's weird to throw out a line like that that is...
It's weird to be talking about souls in professional wrestling. So I don't know if there's a great way to make this not sound weird. But I mean, it was just... some heel logic here from Drew McIntyre. I mean, I enjoy the interaction these two always have. So they could talk about souls all day long. I'll enjoy it. Of course, a promo for WWE and UFC's return to Western Australia. Then we get a promo for John Cena being in the Elimination Chamber, and they really got their mileage out of this press conference clip from the Royal Rumble, because they just, like, they packaged it in, like, very, like, I don't know, five different ways. And this was the latest. And Drew McIntyre has had enough. This is, like, the first I've seen, actually, like, WWE do this, at least for the first time in a long while. Drew McIntyre calls for the video package to end. He says, enough, cut it off. As he walks out to the arena with a microphone, Drew says that he's the only one who is brave enough to say something about Cena, because everybody is afraid of talking bad about the Golden Goose. He sits on the announce desk, cross-legged, like CM Punk, and this prompts a CM Punk chant. Drew calls Cena a hypocrite and can't imagine what Cena in 2010 would say about present-day Cena. He said he'd probably make a poopy joke, tear him apart for being a part-timer, and then make fun of the giant bald spot on the back of present-day Cena's head. Drew says that he used to be politically scared of Cena when he was younger, but he's not a kid anymore, and he's now a monster that people like him created. Drew's about to cut a promo in Toronto, reminding Toronto about their cheers when he cashed in the Money in the Bank at the event and lost it to Damian Priest. And this, of course, prompts Damian Priest to come out, says Drew is delusional, and that R-Truth tells more truths than he does. Priest reminds Drew of his past year, where he won the title at WrestleMania, but Priest cashed in on him because of his Punk obsession. But when Drew won the Money in the Bank, he lost it again because of the Punk obsession. Drew denies that he's obsessed with Punk, while Priest points out that Drew is sitting cross-legged right now. Crowd is chanting CM Punk some more, and out comes Seth Rollins. Rollins says that on that particular night, he should have beaten Damian Priest for the title, if not for that cash-in. Rollins says, unlike last year, he is healed and others don't stand a chance. And finally, CM Punk comes out. Well, not finally, but CM Punk comes out next to a huge ovation. He calls Rollins an oven mitt. And if I had the time to actually pull up the clip, you could see it for yourself. He has no issue with Damian Priest, but says he'll be collateral damage. Punk is obsessed with his Road to Mania and his main event. He'll beat everybody to it. Talks about somebody buying souls and says if souls are something you believe in, Drew doesn't have one to sell because he already took it from him at Elimination Chamber in October. So I guess Elimination Chambers. Sorry, Hell in a Cell. So Hell in a Cell is where you lose your soul. Clearly.
All right. Yes. Maybe that's where Brody lost his a long time ago.
Yeah.
I've forgotten.
So Punk calls Cena out for not showing up. They bicker some more. And then John Cena's music hits. And out comes Logan Paul to a very, very vocal reaction here. Paul says Cena doesn't care about Canada. He says, look at all of us full-timers putting in the work here. But Cena can't show up. He calls Cena a classic celebrity wrestler as the crowd chants, fuck you, Logan. He makes fun of the way Rollins dresses. He calls him Lady Gaga throwing up on a coat hanger. He said he just basically goes through his routine, and Punk eventually has had enough and chases him away. This whole talking segment, if you think my recap went long, the talking segment went about 18 minutes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a lot more varied and orchestrated than last week, and I personally quite enjoyed everybody here. What did you think, Neil?
Yeah, I agree. I think this was a really good go-home segment for the Elimination Chamber match tomorrow. Some really good talks. Some, you know, Drew, I think, is a great talker, and he's gotten better over the last year or two through the
through the
Punk feud. He was just tremendous, and I was really enjoying his running down of Cena when Priest came out. And no harm to Damian Priest, but he's a little less dynamic, I think, and so their interaction wasn't wonderful. But then Seth added something. Punk obviously is tremendous on the mic, and Logan got some heat, you know. And he did one of the ultimate things you don't do in Toronto, which was to call the Maple Leafs the Maple Leaves. Like, I mean,
he auto-corrected himself.
Yes,
incorrectly.
Indeed, yeah. But that's just, you know, just you know your audience. So I think this was good in the sense that, you know, particularly we're not getting physicality between them. We're getting tension and proper storyline build up between them. And you can't even get your hands on Logan Paul. He runs away. And that stands in very stark contrast to the build up for the women's chamber, as we'll get to later on, which, you know, we're allowing full physicality with five of the six, actually six of the six as it comes to it, competitors in that. The build for this, though, much better.
Much like the Rumble, I mean, it's very clear what the WWE is positioning as its main event roster. It's the men's roster, you know.
Sure.
Like, and when you look at the star power, it's kind of hard to argue with that. It's not to say that they can't put more effort into building the women's Rumble or the women's chamber, which is, I think, all we're really asking for. You know, like, by all means, like, okay, headline the show with a segment like this, but just give us a little bit more, maybe, development for the women's. But this feels like it's a main event type of star-studded attraction, this chamber. And I thought this was a segment that really kind of showcased everybody's personality pretty well. Did a good job of just establishing the interpersonal relationships and histories between each of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, like, bringing up all the ties to Money in the Bank last year in Toronto involving, like, several of these men, I thought was a pretty great point.
And something you would never have had a few years back, you know, that kind of bringing up the history, which a lot of avid fans all remember. So we like it when these things are brought up or we're reminded of them.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, famously Vince McMahon told his writers, people don't remember what happened last week. So, you know, we don't care, you know, so...
Seth continuing, you know, the tension with Punk. Drew will always have that tension with Punk, and I thought they played that up really well here. Logan Paul, I thought, like, him coming out to Cena's music, I thought was absolutely brilliant, and I thought, like, Logan had some pretty good lines here, although by that point the segment was running pretty well.
True.
I feel bad for Cena almost, you know, like being the one to not defend himself. We thought Punk wasn't going to show up. He actually shows up. Cena doesn't show up and kind of proves all these people right, you know, that he is like a very kind of hypocritical part-timer. Cena, I believe in interviews, has kind of spoken about, like, maybe the hypocrisy of, like, his words in the past versus, like, the person he is today, but he's never really done that, to my knowledge, like, as a character. So I imagine he'll want to address that probably as soon as Monday if he happens to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if he does, but certainly in terms of star power, the highlight of this particular show.
Sure.
So on the kickoff, of course, we had Belair, Naomi attacking Liv and Raquel on stage. And this leads to a six-woman tag tonight between Bayley, Naomi, Belair versus Roxanne, Liv, and Raquel. So coming up next, our next match in the U.S. title tournament is LA Knight versus Santos Escobar. After a commercial break, Santos hits a big standing Rana from the top rope. Santos is about to go for a twist and crossbody when Knight hits him with a BFT out of nowhere. That was very well executed. Now I ask, like, I think he was going for a twist and crossbody, but I mean, it's one of those sort of like out of nowhere things where it doesn't matter what he was going for because the finish looks so good. Most of the match I felt was pretty standard, didn't do much for me, but I thought the finish was fantastic. But what did you think overall?
We're on the same page. Where I say this every time we review SmackDown and LA Knight, is LA Knight has a tremendous charisma. He is a great promo, but in ring he's rather basic, I find. And there was a lot of just the sort of, you know, basic strikes and throws and sort of holds and all the rest of it in the beginning. But yes, the top rope Rana was the highlight, and the finish looked really great. So I'll give him that.
It's all you need. All right. Yeah. Hey, Randy, this was a sort of a criticism of Randy Orton for much of his career. And just that RKO alone, I think, was enough to really like get a lot of people on his side. Maybe they have something here with this BFT out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, right? Yeah.
So Sami Zayn comes out next. He walks out looking like he has a lot on his mind, and he certainly does. Mm. He calls Kevin Owens out to speak his mind one last time, and Owens does speak, but remotely from the Rogers Center down the street here. So Owens is in the empty stadium here. Owens says that they've been through a lot and shouts out the Ted Reeve Arena and Markham Fairgrounds in Toronto. Owens says he's not the bad guy, and when he ends Sammy's career tomorrow and Sammy will no longer be able to provide for his family, Owens won't feel bad and he'll watch his family suffer because this is all Sammy's fault. Sammy retorts and says that he's nervous about tomorrow, but not about the match, but about what Kevin's family will think of him after he ends Owens tomorrow. So both vowing to end the other. I'm assuming they mean their careers, if not their lives. So
yeah,
good set of serious promos from both men. I thought, you know, although like in terms of like airtime, this didn't really get that much on this particular show, but I think maybe an appropriate amount considering like how heavily weighted the Rock Cody segment is now and the Men's Chamber.
Yeah,
what did you think about these promos tonight?
And I mean, these two can do this in their sleep pretty much at this point. And maybe that's half the problem, is that, you know, it's hard to make this feel different and special because they've been at each other's throats. They've been best friends so many times. I do like, though, because I've been a fan of Kevin's ability to blend comedy and being a heel. And when he was, you know, sort of paired with Cody, I think he did that rather well. But here he's not. He's being super serious. And he's, you know, borderline insane, you know, in his logic about, you know, who's to blame for all of this and what he's going to do, and that he won't even help Sammy's family once he's crippled him, you know, and put him in a wheelchair. He's going to watch them suffer because this is all Sammy's fault. So I think they're doing they've done a very good job, and it's going to be a really good match because that's all you ever get with these two. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the match, and leave it at that.
Do you think this will be the last time they face each other?
No, I don't.
That's their goal. Their intent is to try to convince you that in one of their cases, this might be the last time they'll ever wrestle, period, right? But at the very least, I think they want to try to get us to think that this is the last time they're going to wrestle. I don't think it will be either. No. But it probably, like, I have to think it will be the last time for a while, and then watch, they're going to come back for Mania with it. But it's one of the matches that I do think like has the potential to steal the show, especially these two
for sure.
Big arena with no rules attached. Melo Don't Miz is in the back. Melo is not as enthused about this team clearly as the Miz is. And Miz says, Miz is trying to rile him up and says, it's not awesome. It's Oz him.
Well, that seemed to tickle you.
I got a good chuckle out of it. Honestly.
I quite liked it. I certainly hadn't thought of it. So, you know, when you hear something new, it's pretty cool. I will say Mello seems to be warming up ever so slightly to this Miz partnership. You know,
yeah, yeah. Doing the odd couple tag team with Miz being the eccentric one this time rather than like, you know, Truth, for instance. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Cody walks in at this point, and Miz is the next to give his opinion on Cody's offer. So Miz sort of like plays the devil on Cody's shoulder. Okay. Miz says, I live in Hollywood. Dwayne runs this town. He asks Cody if he just wants to be the fourth judge on a failed reality show, which shots fired, unfortunately, at the Go Big show, RIP. Miz says that they both know that there's so much out there for Cody, and if he doesn't take the spot, somebody else will. I actually thought Miz was excellent here. In fact, this was my favorite of the Cody interactions backstage. And I thought it did its job of foreshadowing potentially somebody else taking Dwayne's offer that won't be Cody tomorrow.
I think that would have been a better ingredient in this earlier. I think, you know, that, you know, someone else in the mix. But yeah, I agree with you that throwing that in here at least makes it a little more interesting. And these are two characters that go back a long way in the company, know each other kind of well and so on. I still have a hard time buying that this character that we've been, you know, that we've been shown really would care about, you know, Hollywood and all of that. But anyway, again, they're trying their best to
make the
best of what happened last week, I think.
Yeah, they were really trying to maybe flesh out the idea of Dwayne's offer on this particular show, and I thought by the end they got there, but we'll kind of get to that. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. Up next, we have our last tournament match before the triple threat, Carmelo versus Braun Strowman. So Tama comes out at some point. He distracts. Solo hits Strowman with the chair, but Strowman no-sells it and instead hits Solo. Strowman then takes out Tama as well. At this point, Carmelo grabs the chair from inside the ring and pulls off the Eddie Guerrero spot as the referee disqualifies Strowman for the presumed chair shot. So Carmelo advances and beats Braun Strowman, basically using the Eddie Guerrero cheating spot. So what did you think about the result?
It was all right. I mean, I haven't seen the Eddie Guerrero phantom chair shot spot done in a long time, and it sort of feels almost out of its time these days that a ref would immediately call for the bell like this. But anyway, you know, it's
kind of felt it was out of its time even back then. Like, you know,
yeah.
But again, like, it was novel, like when Eddie did it. And it's novel when people do it in tribute. I feel like it's kind of lost its impact by this point. You know, I thought the crowd kind of, like, they reacted to it, but I thought it was somewhat mild. And
the thing about Eddie was the charm that he had with it. You know, he would wink at the crowd and all of that, you know, and it was kind of almost a comedy spot. Certainly was a comedy spot at times. So he could get away with it in a way that I don't know whether Carmelo Hayes really can.
It's just largely inconsistent with the way that, you know, disqualifications are conducted, right? Like, referees, if the ref didn't see it, it didn't happen, right? So anyway, for tonight, I thought in the interest of time and also conserving Carmelo's cardio since he had the least amount of time to recover of anybody, it made sense. I guess it was fine. Bayley is with Naomi and Bianca. They all confirm amongst themselves that Liv and Raquel must have attacked Jade after seeing them walk in frame last week. So this is enough for them. They're friends tonight, but tomorrow it's everybody for themselves. So we get our 6-woman tag team match set up this afternoon. Liv, Raquel, and Roxanne taking on Bayley, Naomi, and Bianca. 5 of the 6 women are in the chamber match with the exception of Raquel. So the heels are working over Bayley's leg through the commercial break. Bianca hot tags. She suplexes Raquel, delivers a handspring moonsault for 2. Roxanne tags herself in from Raquel as Bailey is in there with an elbow for a two count. Roxanne avoids a Bailey to belly, attacks Bailey's injured leg, and then hits Pop Rocks to get the win. And what I thought was a good match, you know, heat was okay, but I thought like the six had good chemistry together, carrying some of that great chemistry that the two tag teams had with each other on Monday. So Roxanne getting the win here. And before I get to your thoughts, as she celebrates, Alexa Bliss shows up, hits the Abigail DDT to her as the Wyatt six glitch plays.
Yeah, which I liked. My only complaint really here is, again, you know, the physicality among the competitors the night before their big match feels like a very old school playbook thing. You know, in the Vince era, you would have got SmackDown with tag matches involving the main eventers for that weekend's pay-per-view. And I never really liked it then. I preferred keeping them apart, and I would have preferred it here. But in the bigger picture, it doesn't really hurt the build to the Women's Elimination Chamber match, because it hasn't been a good build anyway. And although, like you said earlier on, the money is really in the men's match, and that's true, the winner of this match, you know, gets to face Rhea Ripley, or at least we assume Rhea will retain on Raw. And that should be a big deal. But we're still plenty of weeks away from WrestleMania. So whoever emerges from this tomorrow night, you know, we've got time to build that match. But the build to the Women's Elimination Chamber itself, I haven't been a fan of.
Do you have a prediction for the chamber? Women's?
I don't. I think the sort of left field would be Roxanne. I don't see that though. Face Rhea. Honestly, it's a difficult pick, and I haven't really thought about it that much. Possibly Alexa, if they want to inject her right back into the, you know, the main event mix.
Could be. We'll find out in 24 hours. So Byron is with Charlotte, who cuts a promo on Tiffany Stratton. She says time is ticking. She'll be waiting for her at WrestleMania 41. Travis Scott will be at the chamber tomorrow. And Shinsuke Nakamura releases a video up next in lieu of having a match tonight. He says dogs are satisfied by the scraps from their master's table, referring, of course, to his participants, to the participants in tonight's tournament. And he says what awaits them will be nothing but hell. So Jacob Fatu, he comes out. He cuts a great walk and talk promo. Mm-hmm. He says, speaking of Shinsuke, he's going to be dog walking his opponents tonight. The sound guy must have had quite the tumble partway through this, because the boom might falls into the shot, and the audio just kind of trails off towards here. But I'm sure very amusing to people who saw that. And then we have our main event. For the number one contendership for the U.S. Championship, Jacob Fatu taking on L.A. Knight, taking on Carmelo Hayes. Fatu is pretty much looking very dominant throughout the entire match. He, though, misses a crossbody into the barricades and ends up stuck on the outside for a bit, leaving Knight and Hayes to fight through the commercial break. Jacob then comes back as the crowd is chanting, Fatu, Fatu, and he dominates again. Hayes hits his springboard DDT, but Fatu just no-sells it, instead hitting Hayes with the pop-up Samoan drop. Knight then goes for the BFT, but Hayes instead hits the first 48 to Knight for a two count. Knight then knocks Hayes off the top. Fatu, I get the sense, was supposed to catch him on the floor. He does not, but still picks him up and throws him into the steps anyway. Knight then delivers a springboard crossbody to Fatu near the announce table. Hayes hits nothing but net to Knight, but Fatu breaks it up with the Swanton Bomb. The Impaler DDT and then a jumping, well, the prettiest moonsault ever, is delivered to Carmelo Hayes as Knight, at the last second, pulls Fatu out of the ring and steals Jacob Fatu's victory for the win. So interesting to see some of the dynamics here, because Fatu to me was the clear babyface here, and Knight kind of had to like transition to being not necessarily heel, but somebody who was more heel like, in fact, working with Carmelo Hayes at one point, and in this finish doing the very heel thing, stealing the victory from the babyface, which was very fascinating.
It was interesting, I think they're cottoning on to the fact that the crowd are really into Fatu, and I don't think they would if they really wanted him to be booed and you know, getting a lot of heat. They wouldn't have him doing those walk and talk promos and things like that. So, yeah, I could see, I noticed that myself during this match, that, you know, the sort of role reversal, almost particularly with the sort of stealing the pin in the end. But a decent triple threat match. I think there was a couple of timing issues in it, but, you know, it's nitpicking. When Fatu broke up the nothing but net, the ref could easily have counted three at that point, but and they covered up on the desk saying he had to get out of the way. But I'm nitpicking.
Yeah, so in the end, we're just kind of, we get Knight versus Shinsuke Nakamura. All right, what we did gain out of it, I guess, was a delay in at least a week from getting that match. Maybe a little bit more of an earned sort of like feeling getting an LA Knight there. But more importantly, I thought we got a really great showcase of Jacob Fatu and what feels like a perfect destination for him at the moment, you know, being the U.S. championship. I can't see, like, Fatu, you could argue, like, if they wanted to push him as a world title contender right now, they probably could. But it just feels like that's such a, you know, there's so many people like that are maybe in that division. I almost feel like he could be the Braun Breaker for SmackDown, like holding onto that U.S. championship for a very long time and establishing that belt. So I would love to see it. And maybe also interesting to ask, is a heel run or return to being a heel in LA Knight's near future?
Interesting, yeah. I mean, he's very over with the crowd. They love to do his, you know, his LA Knight, yeah.
But has he hit his ceiling?
I find it samey, you know, very samey week to week. So I think it would be an interesting thing to do creatively. He would do a tremendous job. I think we've seen it before. So I'd like to see it. And it's bound to happen sometime. So yeah, there's an opportunity there. Sorry.
I guess it'll be no, like he'll do the Daniel Bryan thing. No, that won't work. Cody, I should not be booking the show, clearly. Cody is in the back with CM Punk. Punk says, he wants your soul? What's that about? And Cody's like, yeah.
Speaking for all of us.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Punk is, yes, all of us. He's, I'm sure, like, wouldn't you have loved to watch that segment last week with CM Punk? I'm sure his reactions would have been amazing, okay? And he pretty much says, yeah, he plays like the real guy here in the room. What does it mean he wants your soul? And Cody, for the first time, is like, yeah, I don't know what that's about either. Punk asks what young Cody would have done with that offer. He says he knows that Punk says he knows that a young version of himself would have taken the offer if it meant, you know, main eventing WrestleMania. But he's wise enough to know now that he's happy that it never came to him at that time because, he has no love for Dwayne, but would love to see Cody take the offer. And as Cody is shocked by this, Punk finishes. He would love to see Cody take the offer, shine it up real good, turn it sideways, and turn it up his part-time Hollywood candy ass. He says, Cody, you got here because you followed your heart, and I'll see you at the main event of WrestleMania. So, you know, Punk, if we're talking about Cody not taking The Rock's offer, I actually felt like Punk was my leading candidate to be the one to take it because he's so desperate to main event WrestleMania. But him calling it out here probably might have actually been enough, like, to throw me off the scent and not suspect him at this point. Do you have any thoughts on how this whole thing will play out?
I just don't know. I mean, I imagine that they have a plan. I really hope they do, and that it'll be executed better than the end will be a lot better than the beginning. And I do have faith that will be the case. They'll get there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't help but watch this segment and just agree with Punk and feel like, hang on, these are two guys who kind of get each other in character, at least I'm talking.
Yeah.
And Cody really should be of that same mindset. Like, he should not be, again, I'm repeating myself, but Cody, this character, this version of Cody Rhodes should not even be considering this offer.
So
that's my problem with all of this.
So first, I agree with you. I think, like, if Dwayne is sort of operating at this sort of, like, strange level where we're now talking about souls, Punk is the grounding that, like, a segment like that really needed. In fact, Punk should have, like, taken Dwayne's script in his mind and hopefully like was like he should be editing Dwayne, okay, and really trying to like take us back down to earth at least for some of that promo. But I thought throughout the episode they did a very good job just kind of showing you various perspectives. Essentially what we got was sort of the inner monologue going through Cody's brain about, you know, various people telling him whether or not, various devils and angels on his shoulder telling him whether or not he should be taking this offer. But I thought like the person who might have done the best job of making the argument for taking the offer was Michael Cole up next. So this is our main event segment. Cole's in the ring as he calls Cody Rhodes out. Cole, at least to start off, does not play unbiased journalist here. He frames the deal as whether or not Cody will choose to sell out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And Cole says that the Cody Rhodes he knew would never take this offer. But he brings up what may happen if Cody accepts the offer. And Cole says Cody would receive all the money in the world. He even used the term corporate champion here. And Cody would be allowed to only defend the championship. He'd be allowed to only defend the championship at, Cole says, the profitable events of the year, like WrestleMania. Now, I'm sure Mark Shapiro was listening to this and having a bit of a fit, okay? Because I'm pretty sure all their events are pretty profitable, okay?
Pretty sure.
Probably just a, you know, wrong choice of words here from Michael Cole, but WrestleMania coming up, one of the profitable events of the year. Yeah. Not like Elimination Chamber, totally unprofitable.
He also, for us Europeans, which we're taking umbrage here, he also raised the specter of like no more European tours. You don't have to go over to that dirt-ridden place, you know, are very, very lucrative.
I'm assuming he means the travel time. But yeah, this was interesting. Like essentially you had an official WWF voice here frame what the sort of like, I don't know, least attractive aspect of being a WWE star are. You know, traveling to Europe, working too many dates, not working the non-profitable shows, I guess, on this roster. He even says if he takes this offer, Cody could be a part owner of the company. He could be on the board of directors. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, he says, Cody, you could get rid of your tour bus because you'll be at home with your wife and daughter whenever you wanted to. And I felt this was the most, for me, like realistic reason for Cody Rhodes to take whatever the Rock's offer is, the chance to become somebody who could work a part-time schedule, which means he can stay at home more with his family, which is consistent with, I think, the Cody Rhodes character, somebody who he's a, you know, like somebody who loves his family.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Family man, Cody, who has, you know, completed the story and maybe this, you know, spending more time with Brandy and his daughter and his dog, you know, this is absolutely.
So Cole then directs Cody's attention to the ramp, where the final boss has one final gift for him on this evening, and that is a Ford Raptor with the Cody logo or the Nightmare Family logo on it. Dwayne then appears via video. He's on some sort of runway somewhere coming out of his own truck, and The Rock tries to like speak above the like a jet engine that I'm sure is right next to him. He's about to board a plane to Toronto. Rock reveals that he and Cody have been talking and texting and FaceTiming all week. So we are like, he's really just kind of playing up this like relationship that these two have. Like at the press conference, he's like, yeah, afterwards we took a shot of tequila. Like we're supposed to believe that these two are really just the best of friends. And at this point, it's sort of intentionally a part of the storyline now.
Yeah, that they've been FaceTiming, talking all week, texting all week. Yeah. And yet then he goes on to, as usual.
It is pretty inconsistent with the way Cody like is having this sort of like hard decision, right? Like, but maybe The Rock is sort of inferring a more enthusiastic Cody on these FaceTime calls than we are to, than actuality, perhaps. So, Rock says that he knows Cody loves to drive on the open roads. That's why he gifted him this truck. The beautiful roads, the dusty roads even. So The Rock says he's been talking to Dusty all week, and he knows Cody has been talking to Dusty as well. Rock quotes some country song about cream and coffee. Did you catch the name of the country song?
No, I could barely hear most of this promo, which I'll talk about when you're through.
It's all for Rock to say that he is the cream and he has the cream and the coffee to make all of Cody's dreams come true. Rock takes us through tomorrow where he'll walk out, he'll embrace Cody, and Cody will give him his soul. And at this point, The Rock reveals a weightlifting belt that says Cody's soul on it. It says Cody's soul, June 11th, 2015, which is the date that Dusty Rhodes died. So The Rock says this is the date that broke The Rock's heart, and he doesn't want Cody to break his heart again. So
how can you take that other than an enormous slap in the face, you know, and a disrespect of your dead father? You know, it's true.
I don't know how you would take that as anything but disrespectful.
Yeah. And my other issue with this promo is that I alluded to was the sound. It was clearly he's on the runway next to a jet, and it feels very like you would have more experience of this in action, I guess. Wait,
it sounded like it was edited.
It sounded like they tried to clean it up.
Yeah.
By removing the background sound, and you were left with this kind of very messy audio.
Well, I'm sure the people who received the cell phone video from Dwayne were probably horrified at like the audio quality. Yeah. But I mean, they cleaned it up like decently fine. You know, I'm sure there are AI tools that'll do an even better job these days. But like I was able to make out most of what he said. But yeah, here's like, I thought throughout the entire episode, they had everybody do a great job of grounding this very peculiar question from The Rock. And here's Dwayne kind of like taking this back up to crazy land. Yeah. He made a weight training belt with Cody's soul written on it and the date of his father's death on it. All right. And didn't necessarily give like that, like such great justification for why he would do this. Mm. Anyway, we all know what's going to happen tomorrow. The Rock is going to whip the shit out of Cody Rhodes using his soul and his father's gravestone, basically. So I can't wait to see that scene. Now, I don't know if the live crowd loved having this end the show for them with their live experience, but I personally enjoyed it. Listen, for all we can say about Dwayne and how little I actually enjoyed the performance last week, there's an air of excitement whenever he's around and he's on screen. It just feels like it's an event. And I thought Dwayne The Rock was a lot more controlled and deliberate with the delivery this week. And he fully played the final boss character, like no signs of corporate Dwayne, or at least like TKO board member Dwayne in here. What do you think about the segment?
I mean, I thought it was definitely a step up, but that was a low bar to clear. But it's not on the level of the final boss segments that we got in the run-up to WrestleMania last year. Yet, you know, we will see what happens tomorrow night. So I'm still reserving judgment on the direction of this. I think it's got off to a shaky start for sure. I think that, as I've said ad nauseum on this podcast, it doesn't feel true to the Cody character that he would even consider this and be talking to this man all week about the prospect of giving him his soul. But we'll see. And I think you're right, though, where this is going to end up. And I think where it spins out is interesting, too, because you said something earlier, Way, that I hadn't really considered, which is that on this episode, we had Punk saying they're all obsessed with him. His obsession is WrestleMania. His obsession is the main event of WrestleMania. So could we get him stepping? I think that's what you were alluding to earlier on in the backstage interaction between Punk and Cody. Could we get Punk taking this offer if he doesn't win Elimination Chamber? Because that seems to be his last chance to main event WrestleMania this year. And maybe The Rock would be the only other avenue for him. If Punk is that obsessed, that might entail a heel turn and goodness knows what. But it would be an interesting path to go down. There's a long way to go still, so...
Yeah, we shall see. We will find out tomorrow, again, in less than 24 hours. We hope you guys will join us here at Post Wrestling and youtube.com/postwrestling tomorrow right after Elimination Chamber for our post show. So join us then for all of our free listeners right now. For those of you who are in the Post Wrestling Cafe, please stick around for your phone calls and reactions to tonight's show, as well as some of your written feedback.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.